global philanthropy is still very, very critical for India because they bring some of the global best practices, and they fund certain parts of the ecosystem that are today not still getting enough money. It could be causes or types of work, which I think is very still deeply critical. But by and large, I think Indian philanthropy is becoming strong enough to kind of have a very big impact, you know, with limited support of foreign funding. And I think that's a great place to be for us as a country.
Hello and a warm welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I'm your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, professionals, and philanthropists who are disruptors, yet not in your face. The disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. The values are as strong as the mission. While they're ruthless in pursuing their ambition, they don't stray from being leaders who are not just admired for the vision and relentless pursuit, but also for how they're building an ecosystem of believers who are consistently pushing the boundaries. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their businesses, lives, inspirations, interests, challenges, pivot moments and turning points, and of course, the little joys of life and work. Unusual Suspects streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, YouTube Podcasts, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms and directories. In this episode, we'll take a deep dive inside the CSR landscape in India, its emerging trends, and try to understand how corporate India now views its role in social change. To help decode the same, we are joined by Sri Krishna Sridhar Murthy, co-founder and CEO of Sattva Consulting. Sattva is out with the 7th edition of its CSR report, which explores the myriad ways in which corporates view and incorporate social responsibility. And Krishna has a ringside view and have been in the social impact space for over 15 years now and served as an advisor to prominent international corporations, nonprofits, foundations, government agencies. He has a front row seat and is perhaps the best person to unpack all that is going on in the CSR landscape in India. Welcome to the show, Krishna. Delighted to have you.
Thanks so much, Gaurav. Very nice to be here.
You know, Krishna, let me begin by asking something about the report. The 7th edition of Sattva's CSR report is out, and there's some interesting trends and patterns that are emerging. Firstly, it shows that 57% of Indian companies exceeded their mandated CSR budgets in FY24, which is last year. And many are moving from one-off projects to multi-year commitments. Help us understand this. What do these numbers reveal about how corporate India now views its role in social change? Krishna?
Thank you, Gaurav. One of the things that we've been looking at Sattva has been how CSR is evolving at an annual level, and we use data as a very important indicator of analyzing some of these trends. What's been heartening to see is not just the growth of the amount of the total capital of CSR, which let's say for FY24 stands very close to 35,000 crores at an annual spend level, but also to see how companies are spending, the pattern of spending and the amounts that they're spending even beyond the prescribed amounts for them. Close to 57% of the companies, like you said, are spending more than 2% of their CSR, which is what is prescribed by the government. And interestingly, this number is growing year on year. And you know, about a year or two ago, I think this number was closer to the, you know, late 30%. And now it's, you know, 57%. And I'm very sure this number is only going to grow in the next 2-3 years as well. I think what's happening, and this was very nicely summed up by one of the CSR heads in a recent conversation that I had with him, saying, now that we've actually started to spend the money and we see the value of it, we are very, very happy to now, you know, go further and derive strategic value both to society and for ourselves as an organization. So I think the numbers by and large reveal that India's CSR law is working. There is a strong intent among companies to do good. And by doing good in the right way and solving the right problems that matter to them, the companies are also able to derive intangible value for themselves, like better brand, better stakeholder engagement, better employee engagement, variety of other things. I think that's the key message from this particular, you know, number, I believe, right? It is also interesting that as numbers become larger, and that's something, you know, I feel is quite interesting, that 57% of the companies spending more than 2% should ideally be an overspend of the CSR money. But there's also, as the numbers are growing, there's a difficulty in spending because there's also a little bit of a challenge in absorption capacity. Indian social sector is just gearing up to absorb this kind of money. And from that perspective, some of the larger organizations are actually thinking more about how they should spend and, you know, taking more time to spend. So there's a little more of a delayed strategic spending, which means at a net annual level, we still have a lot of room to grow. You know, we are still underspending as CSR from a net point of view, because a lot of the, you know, overspending is also happening by, you know, by companies that are smaller in ticket size, less than 1 crore, less than 10 crore. But as you go above 50 crore, above 100 crore of CSR budget, we are seeing there's a bit of a challenge in spending it in the same year. And hence companies are taking their time. Thankfully, they're just not writing off the check to a PM CARES or some of the other large initiatives by the government. They're taking their time, thinking through what they want to do, diversifying the sources of where they can spend and spending it in a more structured way. So at an annual level, while the number of overspenders is growing, net, there's still a lot of opportunity to, you know, bring in more capital into CSR on an annual basis. And I think that's the opportunity I think we're all sitting at from a social sector point of view.
You know, Krishna, there's something very interesting that's come out in the report, and it kind of points towards a duality in behavior. So far as companies spend is concerned and their sizes, smaller companies overspend with very deep local intent. So they're primarily interested in making the CSR spend within their areas of operation. And that's the broader trend. While larger corporations are underspending, but moving towards long-term systemic projects. What does this say about the maturity and the challenges of the Indian CSR ecosystem today? Because challenges are diverse. There are various problems that can be solved and needs to be solved by CSR. But is there some kind of a concentration that you see that is emerging? Because smaller companies are overspending in local geographies, whereas larger corporations are underspending, but still moving towards multi-year commitments.
That's a great point, Gaurav, right? So today, if you look at smaller companies, and I want to also clarify, smaller companies we mean by, you know, by smaller CSR budgets. These are actually sometimes large MNC companies in India, but relatively smaller CSR budget because their India presence is of a certain scale. So when we say smaller companies, you know, the thing to note is we mean companies with smaller CSR budgets. The companies themselves may be very, very large. And there could be smaller Indian companies, you know, as well. So all of them kind of fall in the smaller company bucket. But what this whole thing means is that it is not one CSR ecosystem anymore. It's a multitude of CSR ecosystem. It's not a monolith. There are many, many CSR worlds within the large ecosystem of CSR. There are CSRs which are from different industries. There are CSRs which are of different budget sizes. There are CSRs with different countries of origin. American companies behave slightly differently than European companies and Japanese companies when it comes to CSR because their parent companies or, you know, their parent country headquarters also give them some broader mandates, you know, to kind of deliver. So we're really talking about a large ecosystem with many sub-ecosystems that are emerging in CSR. I think that's a very important thing to kind of, you know, think about so that anybody who's talking to or engaging with the CSR ecosystem should first understand the context of that CSR, the company or that, you know, the operations of the CSR, and then kind of look at what their strategy is. What this is also showing us is that the maturity and the pathways are different for each of these ecosystems. To give you an example, building on what you just said, smaller companies or companies with smaller CSR budgets, are choosing to spend a lot in their local areas because they do not have the financial bandwidth to take up a state project or a national project. And hence, you're seeing a lot of concentration of money happening in, cities like Pune, Bangalore, Bombay, the south and the west. And even within Karnataka, it's in few pockets. Within Tamil Nadu, it is in few pockets because that's kind of where, the businesses are. Whereas the larger companies are the ones, or the ones with larger CSR budgets, that are able to take up mandates beyond their immediate areas of operations and take up more national priorities, large initiatives at a national level, which is also pushing money into eastern regions, northeastern regions, aspirational districts, and things like that. And especially public sector companies, because they also have a bit of a mandate to do this, are able to bring a reasonable amount of capital into these national initiatives or geographies where the needs are high. The second thing to also look at is the fact that different companies, like I said, industries have different priorities. So you will see certain type of industries spending more in education, IT, for example, or an automobile spending a lot on skilling. Similarly, you will see a lot of companies in health, pharma and other healthcare companies spending over 50% of their money in the last 3 years in health. And similarly, industries that could be in the mining material space spend a lot more on local development or water and issues like that. And banking spending a lot on income generation and rural development. So there's also a bit of a maturity emerging in what issues that you will spend, which is closer to the material issues of your industries and geographical choices based on your size and scale. So I think that's definitely how we look at this multitude ecosystem now that's emerging in the CSR ecosystem, Gaurav.
Krishna, there's also a discernible shift in CSR geographies. Tier 2 cities and industrial hubs are up by 55% and 120%, while there seems to be some kind of a slowdown, or, it's just metro share is slowly receding, if I may say so. Is this a sign of decentralization of CSR? Do you see that kind of a trend appearing? And if that's so, what is driving this? And how are local economies influencing where funds are flowing now? And what is the kind of influence local economies are having in getting funds flow into their systems?
That's a great question, Garvan. It's a very interesting one as well, right? And I think there are, in my view, three major things happening here. One, I think India's economic growth itself, I think, is now a lot more distributed, and it's not in a few centralized pockets. Being a Bangalorean, I can tell you, the amount of activity that's happening in the outskirts of Bangalore, or the Mysore corridor, or the Hassan corridor, or the Tumkur corridor, and stuff like that. And I'm sure, the Madurais of the world, the Varanasis of the world, the Surats of the world are all where there's a lot more economic activity and action today. And that's definitely driving where CSR spend will also follow. As business growth happens, CSR will follow, because that's kind of where companies are seeing strategic spends happen, so that their brand, their business, their stakeholder engagements, kind of can improve. The second, definitely, is the fact that, there is a bit of a saturation and competition in the metros. It's not easy to get, oversaturation in a city like Bangalore. I remember once there were multiple companies fighting to adopt a slum in Jayanagar area because it was close to their office and people could volunteer there, and nobody to kind of engage with communities just 10, 20 kilometers outside of Bangalore, right? And this is primarily, leading to more companies now realizing that if they want to really create some meaningful impact, they will have to go a little more further, find better projects, rather than compete, in the same backyard where all of their offices are. Doesn't make sense, and hence you are seeing a lot more shift happening to look for better, kind of projects. also credit to some of these states and districts which have also emerged having seized the opportunity or seen the opportunity. You know, I think states like Orissa, we work with one of the, you know, districts in Karnataka where, you know, Bellary or Davangere or, you know, even some of the other mining districts of Orissa and Jharkhand, where I think the district administration has realized that by engaging a lot better with local corporations, you can create significant value. It's much harder today to work with, let's say, a local urban body in a Bangalore, you know, to do a CSR project than, let's say, to do it in a Davangere or a Bellary, because you have much more access to the DC and a lot more faster decision making can happen, you know, as well. So I think it's a combination of these factors that is kind of leading to a significantly more spend happening in these tier two, tier three towns outside of the metros. Interestingly, also, I think some cities are also seeing a lot of growth because local businesses have started to do very well. Companies that used to be in, you know, set up in a Coimbatore or a Udupi or a Mangalore or a Surat, Nagpur are beginning to grow as India's economies grow. And they're also becoming pockets of local spend, you know, as CSR grows in India. So multiple factors, but I think this is a very healthy trend that CSR is moving away from few pockets to different parts of India. Obviously, it's not fully still aligned to where the needs are the highest, where the multidimensional poverty index, you know, kind of indicates India's needs are. But still, it's going away from, you know, the original centers of concentration. So in a way, it's the right trend, but I hope it happens much, much faster and reaches the areas of need a lot more faster, you know, in the coming years.
Now, Krishna, you have a ringside view and have had the front row seat in this space for quite a long time now. How would you characterize, the law was introduced in 2014, and since then CSR has evolved significantly. How would you characterize the next decade of CSR in India?
So if you look at the last decade of CSR, the first decade in some sense, Gaurav, it's, you know, till FY24, the 10 years of the spend amounts to roughly, I think, about 2.2 lakh crores of CSR spend in those 10 years cumulatively, which is a phenomenally high number for a lot of us who were in the sector before CSR law came in. You know, this is just a fantastic opportunity because the 10 years before that, I don't think saw money come into the social impact space in India of that scale, right? But what we need to also remember is 2.2 lakh crores is also the monthly average GST collection in India for the last 6 months. So 10 years of CSR is 1 month of GST, which means India is much more complex. 35 to 40,000 crore of annual CSR spend from an India's development point of view is relatively still small from the need perspective, which means A, it's not just the money alone. The money has to be used well. It is really a catalytical money. It is risk capital because it's philanthropic and hence can be used for systems change, for filling in the blanks, for really being a strong catalyst in the impact ecosystem, which means it should go into a lot more meaningful spends. And we will talk a little bit about what examples of those could be. The second is also, you know, when companies do CSR, money is not the only thing they bring to the table. They bring a huge amount of human capital. The fact that this has been the responsibility of CSR has been held by the board and the leadership very deeply involved, and better decision making is happening now on what problems to solve and how we should move away from just funding projects to solving problems. The second thing is the human capital, the talent that is out there, right? So to give you an example, an automobile company which decides to spend its energies on solving for road safety in India and to, let's say, reduce fatalities in, you know, certain points of highways which have the high fatality incidents, is very, very welcome because they bring expertise, they bring data, they bring technology that can actually solve this problem for India. Similarly, controlling air pollution, similarly, you know, healthcare, you know, India is going to see a lot of challenges in the coming years on non-communicable diseases. And there are health ecosystems, pharma companies, and a lot of other medical ecosystems which could deeply contribute through technical expertise into solving some of these problems. So it is also that technical human capital that, you know, comes along with the money that makes CSR a lot more catalytical. So I hope, and I'm reasonably confident that CSR, which has been so far a little more focused on implementation, infrastructure, will continue to happen because more money is coming in. So you don't have to replace the work that you're doing in infrastructure and, you know, and implementation, but you can also, now you will start seeing a lot more catalytic, knowledge-led, innovation-led, R&D-led, systems change-led, you know, approach to CSR. In a big way that will come, which is also in great partnership with government, private sector, and a lot of other stakeholders, you know, like hospitals and many other ecosystems that will start to happen. You will see a lot more collective action, you know, a lot more synchronized action. You know, collaboration is difficult when multiple corporates come together, there are individual stakeholders, but synchronization is possible. So you will see a lot more synchronization by knowledge sharing, making sure that people, you know, work on different parts of the problem and work together, and hence a lot more collective action that is possible. So I'm hoping that CSR will move from this implementation and infra-led to that plus knowledge innovation-led in a collective action kind of a model in the coming decade, resulting in significant impact to India's development narrative.
You know, Krishna, of course, there's the question of funding and aid. And as foreign aid and philanthropic inflows tighten and domestic regulation around FCA grows stricter, because whether we like it or not, that is the elephant in the room. How can Indian companies and foundations fill the emerging funding gap for social development?
I think the FCRA story is by and large getting answered on its own, Gaurav, because, you know, interestingly, FCRA has been in the range for the last many years in the range of 15 to 20,000 crore, and a lot of that, you know, probably going to institutions and other areas. Whereas domestic philanthropy today, CSR, ultra HNI, HNI giving, remember, as CSR is growing, there's also wealth getting generated in, you know, families in India, in individuals in India, and a lot of them also want to do, you know, philanthropy. India still has a long way to go in creating formal structures in family giving and family philanthropy or domestic, you know, philanthropy by individuals and ultra HNIs in the country. That also is going to add to the kitty. And of course, there's also the middle class giving in India, the retail giving, which, you know, is the everyday giving model that is also very, very active, you know, across the country. And our estimates is that itself is 40 to 50,000 crore today, which needs to be formalized. Again, only 10-20% of that goes to formal channels. So if we really add all of this up, Indian domestic philanthropy is already 3 to 4 times of that of the, you know, the FCRA ecosystem. So I think whatever gap is being created because of the FCRA world, I think is more than enough in the domestic ecosystem that can fill that up. It's just that there will be short-term shocks because, you know, a lot of the organizations that were over-dependent on FCRA or were reasonably dependent on FCRA needed time to kind of build their domestic strategies and transition. I think what we did not plan for as an ecosystem, you know, was that transition time, and hence there's a bit of a shock. But it's not lack of capital, it's really readjustment of our approaches, you know, if we were FCRA heavy organization, and moving to think about Indian, you know, sources of funding and CSR and domestic family philanthropy and things like that. But it's really, you know, the transition that is required. FCRA, you know, will, I think, continue to be, you know, global philanthropy is still very, very critical for India because they bring some of the global best practices, some, and they fund certain parts of the ecosystem that are today not still getting enough money. It could be causes or types of work, which I think is very still deeply critical. But by and large, I think Indian philanthropy is becoming strong enough to kind of have a very big impact, you know, with limited support of foreign funding. And I think that's a great place to be for us as a country.
Indeed. You know, Krishna, for those new to Sattva Consulting, what defines your approach to social impact? You have described it as bridging intent and impact. How does this translate in practice across your research, advisory, and ecosystem platforms like India Data Insights?
Thanks for that, Gaurav. For us, social impact is deeply about the denominator, Gaurav, right? So for us, you know, to explain that, it is not solving the problem to some extent, it's trying to solve the problem by and large entirely sustainably, right? So when we, let's say, you know, think about an education issue or a, let's say, a gender issue or a water issue, it's not about, you know, helping develop two small village models in Rajasthan on arsenic and fluoride. It's eventually solving the entire arsenic and fluoride problem in Rajasthan and making sure that that continues to stay solved, you know, in the years to come. So for us, it is about the denominator. You know, it's not just working with few public schools in India, government schools. It's about working with more than 1.5 million government schools that exist in India. So the denominator is something that we are constantly thinking about, you know, from an impact perspective, and we keep pushing ourselves to think how, as an ecosystem, we can solve problems. Each of us have a role. Every CSR can do a bit. Each of them can be part of the numerator, but collectively, we have to think about the denominator. And that's the view that, you know, from the approach point of view that Sattva comes. And a lot of this, while we do quite a bit of work in data, research, design, and thinking about this, Gaurav, the eventual game is on the ground. Outcome, implementation, collective action are most critical to actually deliver it on the ground. And that's something that we continue to do. And the last thing that has been a big learning for us in the last many years, and, you know, as we have ourselves grown, and me personally as a, you know, in the sector has now gone from a generalist approach, you know, which was there about 10 years or so ago, to a more specialist approach. Now we need a lot more specialists because we've gone from piloting to really solving problems and deeply solving problems and holding ourselves accountable to solve some of the problems, which means we need to now know stuff. If we are talking about public health, we better know what happens in public health. We can't just be a generic, you know, somebody who just read about it and, you know, researched about it. We need to build expertise in public health or in climate or in water or in education or in green jobs, whatever it is. So building that expertise is also very critical for us, achieving outcomes on the ground and making sure this is done at an ecosystem level from a denominator perspective. So that's kind of what defines our approach for social impact, Gaurav.
Krishna, finally, you know, the report makes a strong case for ecosystem collaboration between corporates, non-profits, and the government. Governments, of course, the state governments are also involved as the next leap for CSR. What models or experiments or templates from Sattva's work best illustrate this kind of a partnership in action?
I think that's the most important aspect of the future of impact, Gaurav. We strongly believe, and you'll see this mentioned a few times on our website as well, that impact has to be everybody's business. Only then impact happens. Impact cannot be done by one organization or ecosystem. And hence, we need to bring all of the people together because society, by definition, is all of us. And that's something that we strongly, you know, kind of believe in. At the same time, you know, impact is different for different people. You know, a lot of the people approach it with different lenses, different perspectives. So finding what is common, you know, I think is super critical. And one of the things that we are quite clear about at Sattva is that we need to make collective action or synchronization or collaboration happen without each of the individuals kind of losing or stakeholders losing their freedom to operate or their vision of what they want to achieve. So I think that's the most critical, thing for all of us. To give you some examples, in Karnataka, we run a very interesting, education program where we are trying to help implement the national education policy in a few districts, in a few schools, demonstrating then how a blueprint then can be done for other schools in the same district so that more replication and scale is possible. It's a fairly large project where about 5 to 6 different funders are funding, the Karnataka Model School program that we run. And it's being implemented by about 6 to 8, implementation organizations or NGOs with different partners also measuring impact, communicating the impact, and someone like Sattva holding, the threads together to ensure that the final outcome is achieved in the collective. So this is a great example where multi-funder, multi-implementation partner ecosystem is working together very closely with the government to achieve the right student learning outcomes for students and educators in Karnataka. Many such examples like that, but I think this is, in my mind, a great template for where the future of overall social impact ecosystem of India can go. CSR is a very big part of it, but there will also be other global foundations who will be part of this. There will be family philanthropies who will be part of this. Government will be part of this. Universities, innovators, all of, so the NGO ecosystem, all of these folks will be part of this. And I think CSR has a very interesting catalytic role to play because large companies also, we need to remember, bring the big brand or the large tent under which this collaboration can happen. If a Microsoft or an Infosys or a Google or any of these, folks come and provide that, the big tent or the platform, then a lot more collaboration can happen under that. And I think that's really what we are hoping that in the next decade we will get to see.
Thank you, Krishna. Thank you so much for sharing your deep insights and perspectives on a range of issues. Thank you so much for taking the time out and dropping by to have this conversation with us.
Absolute pleasure, Gaurav. Thank you so much for the questions. It's wonderful to have this conversation with you.